This is the Taco Boat Wellness Podcast with your host, your coach, your Everside Wellness Practitioner, Courtney Handelin. I love tacos and a good play on words as much as the next person. Okay, maybe a little bit more than the next person. But this podcast is about more than just that. Just like each taco can have a variety of toppings, so too is each person's path to wellness. Both tacos and wellness are customizable for each individual. And with each season, it may look a little bit different, and that's totally okay. In this podcast, you'll gain insight from providers here at our Waukesha Clinic and all across Everside Health. We'll even sprinkle in a few local community experts, all to tap into the many areas or toppings of wellness. So let's get this party started and taco boat wellness. All right. Well, I wanted to quick hop in and let you know that this is actually a re-release of an episode that we did back in spring of 2021. But I thought it was really timely to put this episode out now here that we're in 2024. So for new listeners who might not have even seen that old episode, and for people who have listened in the past, maybe already listened to that episode, and there was just so many good tips that you probably have forgotten by now. So hopefully it's enjoyable still all the same if you did listen to it. But really, the main reason is because here we are having an early spring in 2024. You know, it's usually in March, we're still getting snow. And today, March 12th of 2024, it's like a 70 degree day. So, like I said, the episode has a lot of tips. One big takeaway, and again, the motive for re-releasing this episode is taking time to enjoy spring and just really savor the changes to help preserve the pollinators and the health of our landscaping. You really don't want to start yard work until we have 7 consecutive days where the evening temperatures aren't dropping below 50. So that's really important. I'll repeat that again. So temperatures shouldn't drop below 50 for 7 consecutive days before you start that big landscaping stuff. And I'm talking about like chopping down, you know, trimming those bushes or getting rid of those woody sticks from dead plant matter in your landscaping, raking your yard, all that kind of stuff. Because a lot of our pollinators, they spend the winter in that material. And also, you know, at this point, again, March in Wisconsin, so we might get another frost. Hopefully not. I like the warm weather too, but yeah, we just want to keep our plants prepared for that and not disturb things too much. So with that, then, like I said, using this time to enjoy spring, using this time for some extra self-care and allowing to put some tasks that you might have in your head that you have to do, put those on hold and just, you know, take time to grab a chair or set up your hammock and just sit out inside and enjoy reading, enjoy the smells, enjoy the sights of, you know, those little tulip greens starting to pop up, or, you know, maybe you've got some little flowers sprouting up here and there, and just enjoy them and let them have their time to shine. And like I said, making time for yourself to do other things you enjoy instead of getting right in there and adding yard work to your evening routines right now. If you are one that likes to be busy, some ideas for things that you could do to pass the time until it is time to, you know, get into that yard work stuff would be some projects like maybe making a rain barrel or starting a compost bin. Those are things you could start now, even, you know, without disturbing the pollinators. Same thing for, like, you know, growing. If you're just itching to get that the plants and get in the dirt, you know, doing some indoor growing, especially things like herbs or things that maybe you're planning to plant outside in a garden but would like to start inside as seedlings. This can be a good time for some of that. And also just using time to plan if you are doing landscaping, kind of planning out what you want that to look like. Now you have time to, you know, research and kind of get a vision for what things could look like. So in the episode, there are a lot of tips for landscape planning. There's also other tips for landscaping, you know, things like watering and cutting and fertilizing, all that stuff. And we do touch on rain barrels and composting and that kind of thing. So, like I said, since it is an old episode, you might enjoy some old friendly voices. But I will let you go. Hopefully you're listening to this episode while you're on a nice nature walk or sitting outside just enjoying the nice sunny day and taking your spring easy or enjoying a lazy spring, whatever works best for you. Okay, hold up. Before we go any further, we do want to give a quick disclaimer that this podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute providing medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your doctor or other qualified health provider regarding a medical condition, especially keeping in mind that we're speaking in general terms and each individual is different. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something stated on this podcast. Neither Everset Health nor its employees nor any contributor to this podcast makes any representations expressed or implied with respect to the information provided herein or to its use.
All right, welcome back, Podcast World. This is episode number 10 of the Taco About Wellness podcast. My name is Courtney.
And I'm Tasha.
And we are here today at the Retzer Nature Center. We have two very special guests, Janet Barthel, who is the Nature Center supervisor, and Jane Jenks, who is the conservation specialist in our area. And we are going to have a lot of fun discussions today about rain barrels, gardening, keeping your yard healthy. And I also have to say that this is might be my new favorite place to record a podcast because we're surrounded by windows and we can look out and there's a bird feeder and I keep seeing all these different birds fly in. So if at any point we have a lull, it's probably because I'm distracted by the birds and forgetting what we're talking about. Anyway, welcome, ladies. Do you want to say hi?
Hello.
Hello there.
So I think this is a really timely episode, being that it's spring. I got my first sunburn, I'm embarrassed to say. Spent all day outside Saturday and Sunday over the weekend. And apparently, even though it's not 60 degrees yet, and most of your body's covered in clothing, you can still get sunburned. So this is a good reminder. Wear your sunscreen, people. Do you ladies have any special, like what's your biggest excitement this time of year?
Oh, I get pretty charged up when the birds start to migrate back and we see which species have returned from winter. But this week is the first real warmer rain comes in, and Jane would echo this as well. It means salamanders are on the move. Yes. And we can go find salamanders. So there might be cool. A little bit of that going on this week too.
Ooh, absolutely. I get excited about rain because water is my specialty. So yes, bring it.
Yeah, right. Well, it's good then, Janet, that you're not facing the window that I am, watching all these birds fly in.
You'd absolutely
be distracted.
I would be very distracted. I mean, but the reality is a lot of things are popping up in the soil in my gardens, from mm-hmm. you know, tulips and bulbs to native spring ephemerals, and it's exciting because the earth is waking up. So
yeah,
it's great.
That is awesome. Where do you go, like, salamander hunting?
I can't tell you. Those are secret.
Nice try, right, Courtney.
Yeah. I can walk down the Glacial Drumlin bike trail close to where I live because it goes through a lot of wetlands, and you can find salamanders on the trail at night. Take your headlamp out.
Okay, so at night you have to go.
Yep.
Well, the truth is they're going to be on the move at night because they're super secretive, and they overwintered in the uplands from wet areas, and so they're mostly a terrestrial creature, but they are going to go to the waters to lay their eggs and breed and lay their eggs. So that's why they're on the move. But they want to do that under the darkness of night.
So, oh, interesting.
And they're cool. Pretty sensitive skinned and they mm-hmm. need moist.
Right.
So it needs to be under a little bit of a rain as well.
Right. So. Okay.
So well, I can appreciate that. I love Sam. I think they're adorable.
Yeah.
I think they're really cute. Well, that was a really great segue into planting natives. So can you maybe start out, either of you, by telling what does planting native mean?
Well, it's certainly a term that we're hearing a lot more about. So you have to understand native plants are plants that occur naturally in a particular region, you know, before humans introduced plants. Native plants are specific for your area and they're adept to thrive in that area. It's the right soils, it's the right temperatures, it's the right moisture. All of it works for that plant to thrive. Native plants bring greater diversity. The animal species are dependent on those native plants in order to succeed. The birds, the insects, the pollinators, all of it. Native plants have that amazing relationship with all the other native wildlife.
That makes sense. So how do I know if like the plants at my house are native or not native? Is that like I have to, is there any easy way to tell, or is it just a matter of like you kind of have to know and
well, I mean, just researching and kind of understanding mm-hmm. through a plant ID book or a species book that would tell you where the region, the native region or where it occurs naturally occurring would probably be the way to do it. A lot of plant stores are getting a little more keen to providing specific sections that are here are the native plants from our area. Right. So you can typically, a reputable distributor, you could typically trust that they're going to be providing you with something that's going to thrive in this particular area.
And a lot of times you can tell by the names too. So if you're ordering bulbs from a company called Dutch Bulbs, yeah, that's probably not native, sure. You know.
Are there native tulips? Like, can you get native, like, I guess you said bulb and I went right to tulips, but
right. So tulips and none of those are
none
native,
of those.
No,
okay.
But I have them anyway, because they're amazing.
So. Okay, so it's not bad to have non-native
right.
plants.
Of course
a variety.
Not. And we'll probably get into this later, but my yard is a hodgepodge of native and non-native.
Okay.
I mean, I like the mixture. And,
yeah.
and one of the bonuses is sometimes native plants, like a lot of perennials, they don't bloom for a very long period of time.
Right.
It's usually kind of fleeting, but it's amazing when it is. And so, but a lot of things that are non-native or annuals are bred to produce color for a long period of time.
Right.
So if you want color and bloom, which we should be doing that in our garden, I mean, that's kind of the goal. It's usually a mixture of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And right now I've got crocus blooming in my garden. And can I just say that because there's nothing else blooming on the landscape yet, they are a bee magnet. So all the bees,
oh,
when
wow.
the sun is out,
yeah.
My crocus are full of bees.
Right.
So the pollinators can
still use them and benefit from them.
That's a funny fact, because the first thing that really pops up in the soil here at Retzer Nature Center is where the Retzer house was off of County Road DT. And so it's snowdrops are blooming in great patches. They naturalize in big patches. So it's not a native plant, but it's one of the very first things that's up. And it's a little reminder to me of the people that lived on this land before that put them in the ground. And yes, there's pollinators all over them. So
yeah,
that's kind of fun.
Okay. I need to tell you, Janet, there's a ladybug crawling on you.
Well, you know.
You're so there. We're at the Nature Center.
It's very natural.
I just didn't want it to suddenly fly in your face.
No, it's just like at my house.
Yeah. And we did not plan that. I just wanted to tell all of our listeners that was
an insect I'm not too crazy about right at the moment.
Yeah, well,
so.
It's not even actually a ladybug, right?
Speaking of native and non-native.
Yeah.
It is. It's a non-native.
Right.
You could be considered invasive. And
yeah.
Asian beetles are not a welcomed.
And is it true that they bite? I feel like
they bite. Yeah.
They kind of do it
pinch.
More in the
fall. In the fall, they bite.
In the fall, they bite. Interesting.
Yeah. Is it because they're going to die soon? Is that like bees? Like they sting you for no reason, or like wasps?
I don't know. I just think they're evil and they don't belong here.
Yeah. And they've killed the real ladybugs.
They do.
They, right?
They do. It's
like,
true.
I don't even know the last time I've seen an actual
It's rare,
ladybug.
Actually. I don't see it very common either.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, speaking of, so that was an unplanned but very genuine segue. So Jane, you are the conservation specialist, and you had mentioned water earlier, that's one of your excitements about spring. So as far as planting native and amber, you know, may not be a lot of differences, but one of the differences is maybe with water use. And so can you talk a little bit about how water use differs between native and non-native plants?
Yeah, well, because the native plants have lived here forever, they're adjusted to the soils and everything, like Janet said, you don't need to water them. Even when we get into the droughtiest summer, they have incredibly deep roots. So in general, there's a 1/3, 2/3 relation. So you're seeing 1/3 of that plant above the ground, 2/3 of that plant is actually below the ground in roots.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're very drought resistant. You don't have to water them. You don't have to fertilize them. They're used to the soil. So for water quality, you know, you're not putting the chemicals out there to keep them happy, unlike your rose bushes and things like that, that are very heavy on extra help that they need. So they're easy in that way, but yeah.
Wow. That is really cool. I wouldn't have known that. So you don't need, they're not quite as delicate then, which makes sense because they're adapted to the climate and how our weather goes. So,
I think that it's important to note though, that you have to give them a little bit of time to kind of get established.
That makes sense. Like if you're planting a native plant that you're planting.
So you need to be maybe a little keen to, we haven't had a lot of rain in a while and I want to put these in. And so maybe, I don't want to say baby them along, but you might want to do a little bit just to get them going.
Yeah.
So that, but once they go, just like Jane said, that's going to be a tried and true in your garden. And what I like about, you know, we're trying to talk about things that save money. The concept of a yard, which we'll get into, your lawn, is just a monoculture, no diversity whatsoever. And we're mowing it constantly. So there's fuel that's going into that mower to keep mowing it. But if you, you know, start getting bigger areas in your yard that are less turf, less lawn, and more native plants that don't need all the pampering and the chemicals, et cetera, it's going to lessen your carbon footprint with all that mowing.
Right. That's a good point.
Okay.
So on the watering, can we just talk about rain barrels for a second? I don't have one. I really want one. Can you tell us some of the benefits of having a rain barrel?
And like, what is
and maybe
a rain
like
barrel?
What it is.
I'm going to be the one to ask for everyone that doesn't. Explain to me, please. And what that would be.
So a rain barrel is typically a 55-gallon drum that you are going to attach to your downspout in some way, shape, or form to collect your roof water. You have to set the spigot up from the bottom a few inches, so you lose a few gallons of storage. So in a 55-gallon drum, you figure you've got about 50 gallons of usable water by the time you set your spigot up a few inches.
Can I ask you why? Just so you can reach it? You have to set it up a few inches?
You have to, right? And you also have to allow, remember, if we're gathering roof water, most of our roofs are going to have asphalt and grit, and you're going to allow some setting in the bottom.
Okay.
Yep. So that you're going to pull the clean water up.
So you don't want to like raise it on a block and put it right at the bottom then?
Right. Okay. You do want to raise it on a block.
Sure.
But you don't want to put your spigot right at the very bottom.
Okay.
You do want it up a few inches. And depending on how much sediment comes off your roof, you're going to have to clean that barrel out every once in a while and get the gook out of the bottom. But yeah, so you'll have about 50 gallons of usable water. It's naturally soft water. Your plants love it. In fact, I spoke to somebody last week who told me, well, I want to get a rain barrel. She said, every time I try to grow plants and give them my city water, they all die, but they love rainwater. And there's no added chemicals, you know, it's good water for growing things, obviously.
Right.
So
yeah.
If you can capture it, then you don't have to pay city water bill for that water that you're going to be using. It's free, so to speak. And it's good water for that.
Yeah. Ooh, I love it. Do you have any more questions on not knowing what a rain barrel is? Did that paint a good picture?
That helps a lot. I'm thinking of things that we can use in our house right now to collect rain and maybe start our own.
Yeah, could you just make your own?
You can make your own. So a few things that you need to think about is, like, if you're just putting that empty bucket at the end of it, this water, once it sits in there, is someplace that the mosquitoes are going to love. So you want something that's going to keep mosquitoes out.
Okay.
So if you're doing a barrel, you want screen across the top or an enclosed system, either or. But the skeeters have to, you have to keep them out or you will have mosquitoes in there.
Yeah. No one wants mosquitoes.
No one wants mosquitoes. We do not want to be breeding mosquitoes.
No.
So, yeah. Okay. So that's one thing that you definitely want. If you're going to bother to collect the water, you're going to want a bigger container too. I know a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to get a rain barrel and I'm going to capture all the runoff that comes from my roof. And no, you're not. Mm-hmm. You're going to capture a very small portion of what comes off your roof. Mm-hmm. Because if you do the math, off a 500 square foot roof area, which is not a large roof area by any means, to capture all of the water from a 1-inch rain on that amount of roof, you are going to need 6 barrels.
Wow.
So in other words, plan for overflow because you're not going to catch it all with your 1 barrel, or even if you hook up 2, you're going to need to allow for the overflow. And that's really important to make sure that your overflow is big enough, because if you've got enough water, if your drain pipe is running full, so you've got a 2x3 drain or even a 3x4 drain, and if it's running full, then you have that much water coming into the barrel. And if you just have a garden hose attached for the water to go out, you have roughly a, you know, half inch diameter for an exit. Mm-hmm. You're going to have problems. Mm-hmm. So you have to have an overflow big enough to let as much water out as what's coming down. Because once that barrel's full, it's got to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So plan for that.
Okay.
So it could back up your drain spout and be stuck up in your gutters and everything.
Okay. It could. And I've seen pictures of rain barrels that are popping all their fittings and exploding out because of the pressure with all the water coming in. So plan for that overflow. You will have it.
So I'm just guessing an easy way to avoid that, if someone just heard all that, including myself, and it's overwhelmed with doing it wrong, you could just buy one that's already made and that would help avoid some of those mistakes, right?
Yeah. Okay. So at Retzer here, what we do have available is you have what's called a rain reserve diverter kit. Okay. And in this diverter kit, what you're going to do is cut your downspout, put in the diverter, and then reattach your downspout.
Okay.
So your downspout is actually your overflow. So it's going to divert the water into the barrel. Once the barrel is full, it's going to back up. And now the water continues out the downspout just like it did before.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's interesting.
Right. Ah. So then you know your overflow is big enough because it's the downspout.
Yeah.
So you have enough overflow. Just make sure whatever system you buy that your overflow is big enough.
Okay. I am glad that you brought that up. My parents had a rain barrel when I was growing up, but my dad just made it himself. I don't know where they got the barrel from. And so one thing he did was he put the spout up higher, and they didn't have it raised, but he put it up higher. And my mom was like, you can't get the water at the bottom, but I guess that was a good thing.
Yeah.
But I don't remember any overflow thing, but maybe it was just that I didn't know about it, though. I feel like we were able to like use it. So we emptied it out, so it was never like overflowing, but I don't know.
Right.
A child, so I guess I don't remember all that.
Yeah, it must have done something. Either the barrel just overflowed, or he may have had another hose or something out the back, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, thank you, conservation specialist. So in addition to that being a benefit to conserve the water, and like you said, you're only going to get a fraction, but it's something better than nothing. I'm guessing you can in turn use that to water things around your house, indoors and outdoors. Are there any like specific, you know, suggestions or go-to uses for your rain barrel water that you use?
Yeah, the one very specific suggestion is to use it not on your vegetable garden. Everybody wants to do the rain barrel and put it on their vegetable garden. And here's the caveat that I'll give you. Use it on your vegetable garden if you know 100% sure what's coming off of your roof. In other words, you don't want any heavy metals or any kind of chemicals leaching off your roof and then to be putting that on your vegetable garden.
That you're going to eat. Yeah,
right.
Got it.
So know what your roofing material is. Some roofs will be fine. But you need to know, you need to do your homework and know what your roofing material is. Otherwise, use it on everything else. Use it on your lawn, your trees, your flowering containers, your pots. You can wash windows with it because it's naturally soft. You can wash the dog. You can.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Wow,
so just about anything else.
Okay.
That's great.
And you could take it inside then too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's cool.
And use it on your indoor plants, right?
Yes. Well, and that's another good transition into, you know, being aware of what's on our roof and not wanting to add, you know, unhealthy things to our produce. What tips do you both have for reducing pesticide use and natural alternatives to that?
Well, I think the bottom line is use less. We Americans tend to have a concept of more must be better. Yeah. So we just figure we'll do more. And so therefore, then my yard will be even better or whatever it is that you're trying to fertilize. But there's some goofy statistics out there that basically claim that homeowners can use up to 10 times more chemical pesticides per acre on their lawns than farmers use on their crops.
Wow.
They spend more per acre on average to maintain their lawns than farmers spend per agricultural acre. And that's a little shocking to think through because we think, oh, our yard's just tiny. I'm not making that bit of difference. But proportionally, the amount of chemicals that we put on, generally for that certain look that we're trying to have, it's just too much. And a lot of it, and Jane can shed the light on this, it's just sending chemicals into our watershed.
Yes. And I would add to that where, you know, if you're thinking, well, it's just my little yard, it's not that much. When you look at turf grass as a whole, it's the fifth largest crop in our state. Mm. So there's a lot of lawn and turf out there.
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the biggest questions you should ask yourself is be a good consumer. Don't just get caught up in the hype of what's being advertised because this company is obviously trying to sell their product. So keep that in mind. But do I really need it? You know, have you ever had your soils tested to see if there really is a deficiency that you do need to supplement? I did that for my vegetable garden and my flower gardens and everything was fine. And I know that I don't need to add anything more than maybe a nice layer of compost, you know, from the year prior just to work into the soil. And even that, I don't want to really work it in too much because we could go on a whole nother topic of too much rototilling in our garden and soil structure. Right, Jane?
Correct.
Okay, because we're destroying that as well. But if you know that you need it, because honestly, what people tend to fertilize is obviously their lawn.
Yeah.
And there's three numbers that are always on all fertilizers that you'll find on the market. And it's representing nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Those are the three kind of mixtures that a manufacturer is going to put out. And so depending on what you want, and again, I usually have to talk to my, you know, the people that I buy it from. And that I'm not talking the Home Depot and the, you know, the other stores. I'm talking about companies that specialize in providing these to get the right mix. Nitrogen's going to make your yard green. And a wonderful, it's going to encourage blade growth and growth. What's the next one I said? Phosphorus. Phosphorus is not allowed, right? We're not supposed to be putting phosphorus down because it's bad for our water.
It's bad for our water. It causes the algae blooms. Yes.
And the only thing I think, I shouldn't say the only thing, the thing that I know that phosphorus helps is like root development. So I think the only way that you can get a blend that has phosphorus is if you're putting in a brand new yard and then you get like, you're allowed to put some of it on your yard.
Yes.
The other chemical is potassium, and it's naturally occurring in the soils for the most part, and we don't need to be supplementing it.
Right. And you have to watch when you do buy potassium. Many times the form it comes in your fertilizer is potassium chloride, and we have chloride issues in our water. Mm. And that is one place that chlorides can come from is from fertilizers, and you don't want to be putting chlorides on your lawn, especially not if you have a well.
That was my burning question.
Okay. Yes, because chloride travels with your water. It's extremely soluble and it's going to travel with your water, and so it will travel down and potentially get into your well. So watch that if you're purchasing fertilizers and get a different form of potassium than potassium chloride.
So let's answer that question though. People want a beautiful looking yard. And to be honest, so if we're putting chemicals on for green grass, that's one thing, but sometimes we're putting chemicals on to prevent the weeds. The best way to prevent weeds in your turf is by having a thick, lush turf to prevent. So the thick turf is going to prevent the weeds from even coming in. So, you know, your argument could be, well, Janet, I need to put nitrogen on it then to get that thick turf. So I understand that. That's probably logical. I don't ever put a fertilizer treatment on in the spring. I do a crabgrass preventer because that was a bad issue in my yard. But I don't want to feed the grass in the spring because the spring is when the grass is growing the best. Mm-hmm. It's rapid growth. We have frequent rains. You don't need to help it any unless you really like mowing your grass every third day, which I don't. So I don't. If you were to do one treatment of fertilizer on your yard a year, I would say fall. And okay. That's going to help with good root development, and it's just going to kind of boost it. And you'll see that effect come the next spring. And if you don't bag your clippings, which most mowers nowadays, you just don't see people do that anymore. There's great mulching mowers out there. Mm-hmm. If you don't bag your clippings, that all year, if you did that all season, that's really the equivalent of a fertilizer treatment that you've just been feeding into your yard. So that's another great way to help your yard out.
My favorite way is actually leave the clover in. Many years ago, the chemical companies decided that they could make more money by telling people that clover in your yard was bad. They used to seed clover with the grass because the clover feeds the grass nitrogen. So clover is in the pea family and it is a nitrogen fixer. Mm-hmm. So instead of pulling nitrogen out of the soil, the clover puts nitrogen in the soil. Mm-hmm. The grass uses the nitrogen. So the two can grow together really well. And when I grew up, the house that I grew up in, it was a clover grass mix. They don't do that anymore. They put straight grass. They leave the clover out. If you've got clover, leave it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
And it blooms and the pollinators love it.
Yeah.
That's another.
Yeah. It looks nice. I wonder, so as you're talking about like nitrogen and potassium, I mean, I'm just thinking like, can I just save up my spent coffee grounds and throw that out everywhere, and maybe I need to mash up some bananas and broccoli and for the potassium. Probably doesn't work that way.
Well, those would all be great things that you should be putting in your compost.
Yeah,
to
right.
Get a good compost, but you'd have to probably filter some of that out to get a small granule to put on your yard. I suppose that could work. That would just be a little more work than just buying a bag and sticking it in your spreader and going. Mm-hmm. My compost bin gets rather large because of leaves, et cetera, and mm-hmm. things from the house. But I generally put that back into my flower beds and vegetable garden.
Okay. And in the fall, you said?
I'm a super lazy composter. I just make a big pile and I dig the good stuff out from underneath, which does work. It just takes longer to do. And I'll generally put that down when I'm getting ready to plant in the spring.
Okay.
So most people, like you say, you think of putting your compost on your garden. Mm-hmm. Most people don't think of putting their compost on their lawn, but you can also put a layer of compost on your lawn. A 1/4 inch layer of compost added to your lawn is going to increase the amount of water that lawn can hold. On a 1-acre lawn, it's like 16,000 gallons more water that it will hold because of the organic matter in that compost. So if you can hold more water in, you're going to keep your grass greener, right?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of benefits to that going on your lawn as well.
And that brings me to, I think, one of our last questions, which is on this topic. So we've heard that we should really wait until maybe it's a consistently warmer temperature in the evenings before we start, you know, raking and removing all the dead plant material that maybe accumulated over the cooler months. Any thoughts on that, or does it depend upon the type of plants that we have?
Well, I think the concept has been, we used to say, you know, you can clean up your yard and your gardens in the fall or spring. It's just a personal preference. But I think there's been more studies have shown that so many insects overwinter in plant debris and stems of, you know, spent plants that were blooming in the summer, they overwinter in that material. And then, you know, obviously kind of start the life cycle over come spring. So yeah, so the concept is don't be so tidy, don't be so clean. Like there's so many different species that are dependent on our leaves and these plant materials that we just kind of need to leave it be. So use it as your excuse to just let it go. Don't worry about it. Like it's going to be okay. But then come spring, right there, I think the recommendation is 7 days of consecutive temperatures above 50 in the evenings. And then you can assume for the most part that those insects have departed. Now, if you really want to get going because it's getting nice and you want to get out in the yard, you can take those stems and those branches or whatever and just kind of set them off to the side somewhere on your property and just let nature do its thing. But, you know, chipping them up or burning them or whatever obviously is going to have an effect on those species. But I think we're just seeing a rapid decline in insects globally, and it's because of humans. And so if this is one little practice that we can do to maybe help them, you know, you might not like insects or bugs, but the reality is most of them are incredibly beneficial, mm-hmm. and not just from pollination, but I was just listening to a podcast this morning, actually, on oak trees and the numbers of species that come from an oak tree. It just kind of blew my mind, from the caterpillars and the wasps and the moss, and like everything. It's so many things. And oaks are considered a keystone species. So there's so many other species that depend on those oaks. So, you know, when you've got great oaks in your yard doing their thing, like, there's more to it than just that tree and those leaves. Like, there's a lot of other species depending on it. So yeah, just kind of letting it go. And even when it's time to work your soil and put stuff in, you know, that we've had those consecutive days of warmness, and so you can clean it up. Like, don't overwork the soil. Mm-hmm. There's great organic matter that we probably have left all fall. Like, don't feel like you've got to turn the soil so much that you've lost that benefit of that great organic matter at the top.
Yeah, because when you do turn your soil and you get that, you know, you get that smell in the spring, you get that good earthy smell, that is actually the smell of organic matter decomposing and breaking down. And that's, you don't want to lose your organic matter. So when you turn your soil, you're doing that.
So once you start getting that smell, you've done enough, you need to stop.
You need to stop before you get the smell.
Before you get the smell. Okay. That is good to know. That's really good to know. Okay. So I have a small yard, but I want to do, I want to have a produce garden, right? In addition to my flowers. Is that like a no-no? I'm guessing not, because it's a big thing. So it's okay, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay.
No matter the size of your yard, you could even be in an apartment and maybe all you have is a little, you know, deck or a little, you know, patio that goes out, and you've got, you know, 6 by 6 foot space. You can garden with this small yard or a big yard. Container gardening is a wonderful way to get an added benefit. In fact, I have a big in-ground vegetable garden, but I like to have sometimes in a pot something closer that I can just run out and snip a little herb out of a pot that's nearby. Maybe you don't have a lot of good sun exposure in your garden or in your yard because you're all trees. And so maybe then a container would be a great way to do it. There's wonderful resources out there on vertical gardening, just small, you know, little tiny raised beds that you could have on a deck and grow. You could have green beans growing up. You could have snap peas growing. You could have wonderful tomatoes, herbs, great stuff like that. The thing about container gardening that you have to remember is this is an annual growth area. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be putting in perennial plants that would be a struggle for them to overwinter properly. So they'll just die. And so it would be a waste. You pay more for a perennial, so you want to put a perennial into the ground or enjoy it in the pot, but then move it into the ground for winter and, you know, do something different. If you're doing herbs, you know, maybe you love mint. Mint is a total no-no out in the ground because it will just turn into an invasive problem that they'll just take over. Even oregano is another herb that's bad and will just continue to just spread. So those are great in a pot because now you're containing the roots from expanding too far. So, and container gardening is great. Like, you know, the concept is a thriller, a filler, and a spiller. And so there's all these great plants. And a lot of times when you're at plant stores, it'll highlight that this is a great thriller. This is your thing of height that you should put in. And the filler is going to kind of go around it. And the spiller is going to kind of go over the edge of the pot. And they're beautiful. I mean, you know, you're going to have to water regularly because you can't just depend on rainfall, because it's obviously smaller and can dry out. So if we haven't had any rain, then you have to be mindful that I got to give it a little boost in water. Some people will like to give it a little fertilizer boost too, because maybe there's a definite source of how much they can reap from that soil. So have a good soil mix that goes in it. Just don't dig up like earth from your vegetable garden and putting into the pot. It'll just become a compact mess. So you want some things in there to kind of help hold on to water and mm-hmm. allow water to flow through. Definitely have holes underneath those pots so water can drain out, because you'll just have root rot if the water is all trapped. And what I tend to do with pots, which is why I fail a little bit at houseplants, is I tend to overwater. In the ground, I don't have to worry about that because it just flows away. But in a pot, if it doesn't have a way to get out, you could just be encouraging your roots to rot. So yeah, it's a great way to, you can never use the excuse that you don't have enough room. There's always enough room, even just one pot.
So you said herbs like mint and oregano are good, especially good for growing in the pot. Any other like produce that you'd say?
Well, I mean, you could have a pot that just focuses in on, you know, maybe basil and rosemary and thyme mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. just great herbs like that, you know, whatever you like to cook with, or chives. Chives is a perennial though. So I don't know. I don't think you can hardly kill chives. It seems like they're pretty resilient. So
I might have just succeeded in that.
Oh, okay. So never mind. Jane proved that wrong. But, you know, those are quick things that sometimes you want to add into your cooking. But yeah. You could have a leafy green mix. It won't last very long. You know, it's kind of an early crop. Salad greens tend to like the cool season in the beginning. When it gets hot, you just have to replant it again. And that's not all bad either. So, and you know, you could grow a pot of lettuce greens and one salad later, it's all gone.
Yeah, right. So, yes, I did that one.
But, you know, yes, there's some satisfaction in just, you know, knowing that that came from your hands and your yard, and you know what went into it, and so you know it's great. So, yeah, it's a wonderful way to add to a meal.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And like you said, it doesn't have to necessarily be in the ground and, you know, your yard or your lawn. It can be in a, you know, raised flower bed or planter or pot. Yeah. And I think that is a great alternative and option for people that might not have, you know, their own yard or a very big yard. So thank you for that takeaway. Go ahead.
And if you have a sunny window, you can take those herbs in with you, because I have overwintered parsley and rosemary in my house to use all winter long. Love it.
Okay. And so they just keep going then?
Yes.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, I'm going to let the parsley die and get fresh parsley this year, but the rosemary is a perennial, and so it'll keep going.
Yep. Oh. And it smells lovely.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
So any last lawn care tips that you have to share with our listeners?
When you're mowing, leave the grass a little longer, because as Janet mentioned before, you really want that lush, thick yard. Mm-hmm. And if you leave that grass a little taller, it's going to shade out the weed seeds mm-hmm. and outcompete the weeds a little better. So leave it a little longer, which may mean you need to mow it a little more often, because you never want to be mowing off more than one third of that plant.
Okay.
So mow frequently, so that you're not removing too much of the grass. That'll help keep it healthier so that it will outcompete the weeds.
Yeah, you have to have a reality check that in the spring, you're probably going to be mowing more frequently because it's its most active time of growth.
Right.
But also have that blade sharp on your mower, because a cleaner cut with your mower, it just allows for less water loss, because it's not a, you know, a serrated, torn kind of bad edge for the grass. It'll just be more efficient, and the plant can handle the trauma of being cut better if it's a cleaner cut. So that's a good practice to do every spring, is get your blades sharp.
That makes sense. We have like a regular lawnmower, but then we have one of these, you know, like those motorless, like just the spinny blade kind. Yeah, and my dad had given it to me, and I love it for the backyard. My husband hates it, but I love it for the backyard because I get a really good workout, and I can do it while the girls are playing back there without being too, like, I can hear them. I'm not too worried about them, and it's easy to start and stop. But last year at one point, my husband was like, you're not allowed to use that anymore in the backyard, because it would, first of all, I would do, like, half the yard and then leave it. But it would also do like weird, we were getting a lot of weeds coming up. And I think it was because it wasn't a sharp blade.
Yep. Just, there's a lot of blade on those older rotary. Yeah. And then some of them are new rotary. Just, keep the blade sharp.
Keep the blade sharp.
Cut it better.
The spinny blade thing, as you called it.
Yeah. Whatever they're called, who cares? So I just had a couple other tips to share, or I should say not tips, but a couple interesting findings. But before I jump into that, do you ladies have anything else? Was there anything else that you want to share with our listeners that we didn't touch on?
Well, I would just encourage people to give gardening a try. Like, don't be intimidated by other examples maybe you've seen in your life. I change up my gardens all the time. I realize, oh, that plant needs more room. I got to move it this next year. That's okay. You know, just you kind of just be flexible and go with it and try different things. Maybe I didn't like this year. Well, I'll try this next year. Maybe I'll try this vegetable. Well, that was a bust. I'll try something else. Like, just be willing to give it a try. It's super fun.
Yeah. And be willing to try one new native plant.
Agreed.
I like that. That's a good one. So, okay. I had also done some research for this because obviously we know gardening and being outside has a lot of health benefits. And I was doing some research and there was a research article that I found. I'd be interested to hear what you guys think about this. Obviously, gardening burns calories, right? And you get vitamin D. And I didn't think about this, but you increase your hand strength when you're working in the yard and doing all that kind of stuff. But I also read that getting dirt under your nails when you're digging, it says it makes you happier, but it was because inhaling the certain healthy bacteria that lives in our soil increases the serotonin levels, which reduces anxiety. Is that something you guys have heard before?
Yeah, and I've also heard Dr. Ann say that there's good bacteria that you can pick up for good gut bacteria that you can pick up from working in the soil.
Oh, really? So yes. Not even not licking your hand after.
Yes. Right.
I mean, I'm just thinking of my kids like playing in the dirt and then, you know, like sucking their thumb afterwards.
But yeah. there's benefit to that. I think we've gotten to be so antibacterial.
Yeah.
And
right.
Now in, you know, the last year that we've all had, like we're so super, you know, overly cautious on washing our hands. And I'm not negating that because obviously that was a highly valued practice that we all needed to do. But every once in a while, like there are bacteria that, I don't know, maybe the kid needs to eat a little dirt every once in a while to kind of help with that.
Yeah.
Obviously within measure, don't send your children out with a spoon. Like, that's not what I mean. But there's something about just maybe not being so sterile in what we're exposing ourselves to and help our body build up those immunities. I'm no expert on that field, but I know that I always am a better person, a happier person if I have spent more time outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last year we've had people that never felt that before have started to feel that. And so whether I'm working or not, and on MyFitnessPal or other exercise apps, gardening counts as exercise. It's true. So it's got its benefits for sure.
And there are many studies at this point now that talk about the many health benefits of being outside.
Yeah.
So gardening is just one little piece, but outdoor time is good time. It's quality time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Courtney and Tasha, you're going to have a whole nother talk on coming to Retzer Nature Center and hiking the trails and the benefit of nature, being out in nature. So
I like that. Ooh. Okay. Listeners. Stay tuned. We might have to, maybe we can come here. I wonder if we could record a podcast episode while we're hiking.
And Janet, you could
talk to us about the native,
absolutely.
The native species you have here and
yes.
All the different benefits that we're getting when we're standing next to the oak tree versus the daffodils.
Yeah.
Like that. Awesome. Well, this has been a really fun episode. Thank you, ladies, so much for sharing your expertise with us.
My pleasure.
And I guess we'll encourage everyone to come here to Retzer Nature Center.
Absolutely.
Get some.
Thank you both so much.
What do they call it? Vitamin N for nature.
Yeah.
While you're here. And that's it for today. Everyone say bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I'm so glad we got to talk about wellness today. And I'm especially thankful for you, our audience. Thanks for tuning in. If you have any questions from this episode, please feel free to shoot me an email. For our Waukesha Everside members, if you would like to chat about how the concepts you heard in this episode can fit into your own personal taco of life, call to schedule a coaching appointment. If you really love this episode, be sure to give us 5 stars and share it with a friend. Everyone can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Waukesha Employee Health and Wellness. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from so you never miss an episode. See you on the first Tuesday of every month for Taco Tuesday. Until then, bye!